Welcome to this edition of Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your guest host for this episode, Dr. Doug Ray from Baltimore, Maryland. Today, I'm speaking with Mas Takashima. Dr. Takashima is the chair of the Department of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery at Houston Methodist Hospital. He's also the director of the Sinus Center at Houston Methodist. Today, we're going to be discussing his recent publication, 3-year outcomes of temperature-controlled radiofrequency ablation of the posterior nasal nerve in patients with chronic rhinitis. Mas, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Doug. You know, it's really great to be here to talk to someone who prolifically researches and publishes on this topic, such as yourself. You know, I've had a chance to read all of your work, long-term outcomes, as well as the multi-point radiofrequency. Masterful. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Mas. And you've done a lot of work in this area too. And so Mas and I have sort of shared a lot of interest in this area. And I thought this would be a great opportunity for us to sort of talk about a little bit clinically and sort of talk about what the research shows, and then maybe sort of where we think that this procedure, this technology is going in sort of other areas that we can think about using this technology to treat, clinical areas.
Yeah, you know, I do think that this is one of the most exciting shifts we're seeing in otolaryngology right now. You know, our field is really intersecting with neuromodulation and airway disease management. And you know, I think for decades, we've approached this disorder like chronic rhinitis, chronic cough, migraines, and even sleep apnea, primarily as an inflammatory or structural standpoint. But now I think we're recognizing that many of these conditions are also driven by neural dysregulation, you know, excessive or misdirected anatomic inputs that perpetuate symptoms long after initial insults. And so, you know, if you look at this as a whole, I think it opens up entirely a new dimension for us as otolaryngologists. We now have the tools to modulate rather than destroy, so that we can really quiet down or reset the hyperactive neural pathways while preserving normal function. And so, you know, I do think that posterior nasal nerve ablation is a great example of this concept. It's not really about cutting or removing structures, but rather restoring balance to the parasympathetic system that, of course, as we all know, drives the nasal hypersecretion and congestion symptoms. So, you know, as we talk about all these studies about posterior nasal nerve, I think it's really helpful to see that really what's going on here is that this is going to differentiate us from other specialties. We, as otolaryngologists, you know, we have direct access to these neural gateway of the upper airway. Thus, it gives us really a unique ability to intervene precisely and durably. So really, how can you not be excited about that?
I agree. And I think as we go through our discussion about your paper and sort of opportunities for future research, it's going to come out, it's going to be obvious in listening to our conversation that in the past, we've sort of focused on structural issues, anatomic issues, and then inflammatory issues. But there's a whole third circle in that diagram, which is neurovascular, that we really have sort of not understood and ignored for a long time. Even though, you know, drugs like ipratropium have been around and we've been using them, we haven't really thought about or addressed that. And I think it gives us a whole other way of approaching these disease states in chronic rhinitis and even in possibly sinusitis. It gives us a whole opportunity to add another treatment that may improve patient outcomes.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I think this is a really open field at this point. I think we're going to learn a lot here in the near future about neuromodulation. And I think we'll be talking a lot about that here soon to come.
Yeah. So I'll give a quick background to your paper and then we'll kind of dive in, Mas, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So we all know that there are parasympathetic fibers from the seventh cranial nerve that enter through the pterygopalatine ganglion and innervate the nasal tissues in the sphenoethmoid recess. And these nerves mediate neurovascular autonomic functions that can cause changes in blood flow. And these changes in blood flow result in nasal congestion, drainage, rhinorrhea, postnasal drip. And so over the years, new devices have come to the fore, which have been designed to suppress these nerves with a goal to regulate or reduce these rhinitis-related symptoms. So Mas, there have been two previous studies. So this third study is sort of an addition to the previous two studies. So I thought we could approach it looking sort of at the data from all the studies. But basically, these studies published quality of life outcomes that were seen in a radio frequency ablation of the posterior nerve. And the study is sort of an update, a 3-year outcome update. So Mas, tell us a little bit about the design of these trials and we'll go from there.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, these studies were part of a prospective, multi-center, patient-blinded, randomized controlled trial with a sham arm. The initial trial followed patients for 3 months, and after unblinding, the sham participants were allowed to cross over and receive active treatment. So really, I guess this isn't a true crossover study, as only the sham arm crossed over. And of course, you know, the active arm really couldn't cross over. But that being said, the long-term 2 and also the 3-year papers really report outcomes from both the original active and crossover cohorts combined. I guess the gist of the paper is that, you know, we use this treatment, which is a in-office under local anesthesia using temperature-controlled radio frequency, which was applied to the region of the posterior nasal nerve at the posterior middle meatus and the inferior turbinate area. And the idea was to modulate the parasympathetic fibers that drive excessive glandular secretion and vascular congestion without, of course, the morbidity of a surgical procedure like a neurectomy, a posterior nasal nerve neurectomy, or a Vidian neurectomy. So really, what we really looked at, the primary endpoint, I guess people will probably want to know, we were looking at the reflexive total nasal symptom score endpoints, as well as quality of life outcomes using the mini RQLQ and patient-reported measures of cough and postnasal drainage.
Okay, so Mas, what did you see across the studies? And again, the studies looked at sort of 3-month outcomes, then 2-year outcomes, and then the same measures at 3 years.
Yes, that is correct. We really tried to focus our inquiry on, of course, the improvement of symptoms, but not only that, really the effects and quality of life that we would see from improving these symptoms as well. And really trying to figure out, you know, because we really didn't separate allergic rhinitis from non-allergic rhinitis patients. And so we really wanted to try to also figure out, you know, what was happening in those patients as well.
So you also just determined a responder rate. So what was the definition of a response?
Sure. So, you know, overall, our response was pretty good. You know, at 3 months, the mean RTNSS improvement was roughly about a 43% reduction from baseline. By 2 years, that reduction was about 64%. Then at 3 years, we saw about a 57% improvement from baseline. And so, you know, when we were looking at who was responding and what we would utilize to really define the responder rate, we defined it from a measure that's being utilized by the FDA for any clinical trials for rhinitis, any allergic rhinitis, non-allergic rhinitis trials also look at, and they've pretty much defined it as a 30% reduction in the reflective TNSS score. And really the MCID, or the minimal clinically important difference, was 30%. And so when we looked at patients who truly, you know, perceived an improvement, this number isn't just a statistical, you know, artifact, but really a tangible day-to-day difference in congestion, rhinorrhea, and sneezing. So when the 3-year data shows that roughly 80% of patients maintained at least a 30% improvement in RTNSS, really, you know, that's not arbitrary. It means that 4 out of 5 patients continue to experience real noticeable relief.
And one of the things I noticed in looking at the outcomes is that most of the improvement occurred in the first 12 months. There was sort of a gradual improvement, especially in the first 3 months. And then over the first 12 months, it increases and then plateaus out, although it maintained over the 3-year period for the most part. Do you have any ideas what the mechanisms might be to explain sort of why the benefits plateaued but didn't regress over that period?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. And, you know, early on, we were frequently asking ourselves, you know, why we were seeing this. And really, I think the stability reflects a sustained physiologic modulation of the parasympathetic system. So take, for example, reduced glandular output and reduced vascular permeability. And, you know, we're seeing this even after some axonal regeneration. So essentially, you get a long-term reset of this nasal hyper-responsiveness rather than permanent nerve destruction. And if you look through the literature, there have been many papers looking at this, which have come out from Japan from researchers there, where their hypothesis was that once the hyperactivity of the parasympathetic system was modulated, this then led to a downregulation of the production of mucus-producing glands, which may explain the long-term lasting results that we're seeing with these procedures.
So even though there's nerve regrowth, which you would expect because we're not destroying the nerves, we're just sort of ablating them temporarily, but not destroying them. And so even though there's nerve regrowth, there's sort of a reset in the tissues that cause that lasting effect.
Yeah, that's what we hypothesize.
Okay.
And I know that there was about a 50% reduction over during the 3 years in the reflexive TNSS. How clinically meaningful is that compared to the sort of minimal clinical important difference in the RTNSS quality of life score?
From a clinical standpoint, you know, we're seeing a 57% mean reduction, which is nearly double the MCID threshold, because the threshold is 30, right? And so most patients experience meaningful relief across multiple symptom domains. And I think this really translates to a very tangible improvement in daily comfort and quality of life.
Yeah. And you know, what I liked about your paper also is that you looked at symptoms outside the RTNSS. You looked at cough and postnasal drip, which we see in these rhinitis patients. So a couple of questions. First of all, a lot of times in rhinitis research, we don't look at cough and postnasal drip, which is one of the things I liked about this paper. But why do you think that's not looked at in rhinitis research historically? And then also, what did you see in terms of these symptoms in your studies?
Yeah. So as you know, we did look at some of these symptoms beyond what RTNSS typically measures. TNSS, for those that are listening, you know, it looks at four cardinal nasal symptoms of rhinitis, including rhinorrhea, nasal congestion, nasal itching, and sneezing. And this is on a 0 to 3 scale. Unfortunately, symptoms of cough and postnasal drainage aren't represented in this TNSS scale. And thus, what we did is we utilized a similar scale, so a 0 to 3 scale, similar to TNSS, looking at self-reported cough and postnasal drip symptoms. What we saw was that at 3 months, both the cough and postnasal drip improved significantly, and these gains were maintained through a 3-year time frame. So what this means is that the cough scores fell from about 1.5 to 0.7. We'll leave it at a 1 decimal point difference there.
That's an inside joke.
It is, right? Which represents
Ron Cooper Smith is listening right now.
which is a 53% reduction, and that's for the cough. And postnasal drainage, there was about a 44% improvement, with the majority of patients shifting from moderate or severe to mild or none by the 3-year mark.
So, Mas, we've talked about this, but just to sort of include it for our listeners, do you think, so this is an interesting outcome of the study. You see these patients with cough and postnasal drip with symptoms of rhinitis. Do you think about these treatments for patients with cough and postnasal drip?
Yeah, you know, and that's sort of the reason why we included, you know, cough and postnasal drainage, you know, metrics to assess their symptoms, because, you know, traditionally, I think we always think of chronic cough and postnasal drainage being attributed to excessive mucus production. And this nasal drainage then causes inflammation of the airway, stimulating, you know, a person to cough. But, you know, there are many refractory cases, as you know, and these cases, you know, I think are more of a neural hypersensitivity disorder, which involves abnormal sensory nerve signaling in the nose. And in this instance, driving a response in a different location, such as a cough. And so the posterior nasal nerve, you know, we know that it not only carries the parasympathetics, but also some afferent sensory fibers in the nose. And so the hypothesis that I have is that these afferent sensory fibers, along with the trigeminal branches, you know, they both converge centrally in the nucleus tractus solitarius. And so what I'm thinking is that there's more than likely an increased sensory stimulus to this nucleus, which then triggers via vagal response cough. So this neural cross-sensitization can cause that nasal irritation to trigger cough, even in the absence of overt inflammation. You know, I think this is another example of airway neuromodulation that we've been talking about here.
That actually is really interesting, Vas. To be honest, I've never thought of it that way, but it's makes perfect sense. So you mentioned earlier that you didn't really exclude allergic rhinitis patients in this study, which I think is, again, interesting and important when we're thinking about the effect of neuromodulation on anyone with rhinitis, both allergic and non-allergic. Did you see a difference in your study between the allergic and non-allergic rhinitis patients?
Yeah, you know, so in our study, it was interesting because both allergic and non-allergic patients benefited, and we really didn't see a major difference in the response rates, suggesting that the parasympathetic overactivity, you know, is a shared pathway in both phenotypes. I mean, intuitively, I think you might expect patients with allergic rhinitis, where the underlying issue, of course, is an IgE-mediated inflammation, you'd expect those patients to respond possibly less dramatically to a nerve-based intervention. But I think what we're learning is that the parasympathetic nervous system really plays a critical amplifying role in both allergic and non-allergic rhinitis. And so with allergies, you know, it may initially start as an IgE-driven event, but it quickly recruits the nervous system. And that allergic exposure can excite the sensory fibers, like we were talking about. And that can trigger a parasympathetic outflow via the pterygopalatine ganglion, causing persistent hypersecretion and congestion. So I like to tell my patients, you know, the immune system lights the flame, but the nervous system continues to fuel it. And so if we target the posterior nasal nerve, you know, we're not treating allergies per se. We're really modulating that downstream neurogenic component that drives congestion and rhinorrhea. And so, you know, I think that's why both allergic and non-allergic patients showed parallel improvements in both RTNSS and the mini RQLQ outcomes.
That's important to point out, Vas, because I think traditionally when we started using this technology and these procedures, we thought it was for what we traditionally referred to as gustatory or vasomotor rhinitis. But I think what you've so eloquently described, we're finding that the neurovascular pathway, the neuromodulation, seems to affect multiple phenotypes, not just the traditional phenotype that we use these procedures on.
Absolutely. And I think that's the reason why, you know, these patients with allergic tendencies experiences a dramatic reduction in symptom intensity once you sort of calm that parasympathetic overactivity down. So, you know, I think the takeaway here is that chronic rhinitis, regardless of what the etiology may be, typically involves both an inflammatory and a neurogenic pathway, a pathway that we typically don't really talk about, right?
So, Maz, just quick question. Did any of the patients relapse or require retreatment during the three-year period?
Yeah, so no repeat PNN treatments were permitted in the study, and only a small number of patients underwent unrelated nasal procedures over that three-year time period. So, yeah, we really didn't look at the relapse rates per se, partly because it wasn't allowed in the study.
Okay. And then what about adverse outcomes over the three-year period? Did you see any of those?
Yeah, there were no significant device or procedure-related serious adverse events, as well as no late complications observed over the entire follow-up period.
Okay. And so, Mas, I'm going to shift gears a little bit. And sort of we have this data, we have these outcomes, we have this new way of thinking about neuromodulation and posterior nerve neurolysis for chronic rhinitis and other diseases of the sinonasal tract. What other diseases could you envision neuromodulation, posterior nerve neurolysis, in treating related directly to the sinonasal passages, or maybe sort of outside the box?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great question. You know, I think for years, we as otolaryngologists have excelled at structural solutions, right? Opening the sinuses, straightening the septums, reconstructing the airway. But, you know, I think the next frontier, in my opinion, is functional precision, or in other words, you know, understanding and modulating the neural circuits that drive airway behavior, whether it's PNN ablation for rhinitis. We also have hypoglossal nerve stimulation, right, for sleep apnea, or future work addressing chronic cough and dysphagia. You know, we're all beginning to treat not just the airway's form, but its function. And so if you look at the long-term data from all these trials, I think it really reinforces that the effects are durable, because really it's rooted in physiology, right? Not removal, but really in restoration. And I think that's key. So as our technology continues to advance and our understanding of the neuroglandular system deepens, I think we will continue to lead in translating neuromodulation into a tangible patient benefit. And that's where the future of rhinology and airway management is headed. And I think it's an incredibly exciting time for all of us in this field.
So Mas, if you could pick one or two studies that you'd like to do next, what would those be?
Yeah, so Doug, I think the studies that go beyond symptom control, you know, are important. This neuromodulation concept, I think, is still new. You know, I think we can really try to demonstrate that we can truly influence airway physiology through targeted neuromodulation. And I think that's going to really represent a fundamental evolution in our specialty.
Yeah. And there's all kinds of disease states out there that we could think about that are related, but different. And the, some of the things I'm thinking off the top of my head are eustachian tube dysfunction, headache, rhinogenic headaches, things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know that people are looking at migraines and headaches very closely at this point, and I do think that makes sense.
Well, Mas, I really appreciate you taking a little bit of your evening during the week with me in Houston. I really want to congratulate you and your authors on a meaningful paper. And I think these papers, especially your paper and others that are being published right now, really are going to change fundamentally the way we understand chronic rhinitis, sinonasal diseases, and understand that there's another component, the neurovascular component, that we should be thinking about and treating, and gives us an opportunity to better treat these diseases and maybe treat some new diseases. So I thank you for your time and congratulate you on this paper.
It was a pleasure, Doug. Thank you so much for inviting me. I really enjoyed our discussion, and I look forward to seeing more of your work as well.
So I want to thank you, our Scope It Out listeners. This is Doug Ray for Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology, signing off for now. Have a good evening. Take care.